what you'll see beyond the title of the book, this conversation that I'm having, it's really one of love and understanding and finding the path that works for you to find authentic, in my opinion, intuitive eating. Because it's really nice for us to stay, I'm an intuitive eater, or say, use the hashtag on Instagram. But really, what does that truly mean for the practical everyday life?
This is the Alchemized Life podcast. I'm your host, Ava Johanna, and I am so grateful to have you here joining me for yet another soul expansive conversation. My intention with every episode is to show you through storytelling and in-depth conversations that you, yes you, are capable of creating anything you desire. Alongside yours truly, you'll hear from thought leaders and industry voices, and together we will teach you how to come alive in your authentic expression and remember the infinite power of your soul. We're covering topics like wealth, worthiness, the pursuit of your passions, and you'll be inspired to break all the rules of living an ordinary life. You were truly put on this planet to have it all. The thriving spiritual practice, the steamy relationship, the income, and the impact. So together, let's align with our divine selves and alchemize your life. Oh my goodness, you guys. I am so excited for you to hear this conversation with Dr. Will Cole. He's come on the podcast before. Last time he came on, we talked about inflammation and diet and stress and mindfulness. And in this conversation, we're talking about intuitive fasting, which honestly, for me, I feel like this was the first time that I've felt very validated in my nutritional patterns, I would say, and just how I choose to fuel my body and in a really intuitive way, right? So Dr. Will Cole, his book just got released last week. It's his third book, Intuitive Fasting. And one of the things that I really love about this conversation is that he doesn't approach any of it from this very dogmatic way. It's approached from this way of really reclaiming that you know better than any diet, any Instagram influencer, any nutritional trend that's going around, that you know best on how to fuel your body and how to take care of your body. And with intuitive fasting and his book and the protocol, I don't even know if it's necessary, if protocol is necessarily the right word, but with, and you'll see in this conversation, everything that he's sharing in the book and in this conversation is all about clearing the static and reclaiming that power, reclaiming so much of what we have given away to trends and media and diet culture. And so it was incredibly healing for me to have this conversation with him and just feel so seen in the ways in which I felt like so many trends hadn't resonated with me, right? The cleanses, I will say some cleanses I like better than others, but I'm very intuitive with them and flexible with them. But like the strict cleanses, or, you know, gluten-free, or, you know, dairy-free, all of these things that I was told I should do in order to be healthy, in order to have better gut health, in order for my acne to clear up. At the end of the day, so much of it made me miserable. And I've know I talked about this before, but we brought it up a little bit in this conversation today, because what Dr. Will Cole is doing, I think, is just revolutionary for bringing people back to themselves and learning how to trust themselves deeper in the way in which they fuel their bodies, so it can be sustainable changes that we make in our life, not just something we're forced into doing that we don't actually want to do, that maybe isn't even making us feel better or addressing the root problems. So I had such a good time having this conversation, and his book is out now. It's so good. You can find the link to it in the show notes, and I highly suggest following him on Instagram because he's got such a wealth of information, and he's such a just an amazing, amazing human being. So I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this conversation. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Again, go to the show notes for any resources, and I will see you in the next episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Alchemize Life podcast. I think it's such a gift when I get to have guests on multiple times because it allows us to just elaborate and go even deeper into the juicy magic that we set the stage for in our first conversations. And today I feel so grateful that I am here with Dr. Will Cole. If you did not listen to the first episode or the first conversation we had, it was so good, all about inflammation and diet. And today we're going to be diving deeper, and I'm really excited. Thank you so much for coming on again and for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm sure your schedule is crazy busy getting ready for your book to launch next week. But I'm just super grateful that we get to dive deeper, because this is actually a topic that has been, out of all of the like nutrition and diet and health, has always been the most interesting for me, because I think that it's where I personally, from like a health standpoint, feel most seen and most validated in my like natural intuitive habits, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that these are important topics, and this concept of intuitive fasting is really born out of my years of clinical experience of seeing how, on one level, it seems paradoxical of how could fasting ever be intuitive? But as I explained through the book, it very much can be. And I want there to be a grace and a lightness to wellness and food and fasting, all of these things. These are tools to better your life, to enhance how you feel. So it's not what you think. It's not a dogmatic, obsessive, way of living. It's a very much a sound way of eating.
Yeah. Absolutely. And like I said, it for me, I was like, oh, I feel like validated in like what actually feels good for my body. Because I remember for a long stretch of time, it would be, I actually lived with a bikini competitor. And so she was amazing. She would like make sure I was drinking enough water, but also like make my meals. And it was like eating so often to the point where I was like, I don't want to eat. This doesn't feel good. But then I felt guilty because I wasn't eating on the right schedule. And so can we just start there with like the permission slip of all of the different various ways we can fuel our bodies, and like this being one beautiful way?
Yeah. So I think that the ethos of why I wrote all the books, but this one specifically, I really wanted it to be imbued with a sense of, this is not about being obsessive or orthorexic or an eating disorder disguised as a wellness practice. This is just a, as I mentioned earlier, ways to enhance how you feel. So oftentimes society says, we have to do, we hear all this conflicting information online, and we don't know what to do. We hear our friends say one thing, and then we see it on Dr. Google, the other thing. And then we heard this podcast say the other thing. It's like, what I want people to have is have agency over their health, be their own N of one experiment to see how they feel their best. So for some people, it's going to be one way. For other people, it's going to be other way. That's the heart of functional medicine. It's bioindividuality. We're all created differently. And if I hung my hat on like one set of thing that's going to work for everybody all day long, I'd be proven wrong all day long. Yeah. So that's the science and the art of functional medicine. And it's the science and art of you, whoever is listening. It's that finding out how to use these amazing tools like fasting or certain ways of eating or any practice, and saying, how can I leverage the benefits? How can I find my sweet spot with it? Does it serve me? Does it enhance how I feel? And then that's all you need to know. So society will say, this is what you should do, or you'll hear this pontification on a podcast about this is what you should do. But all of that will be secondary to your knowing about your body. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like good information. You'll get some nuggets that you get something out of that conversation, but it won't rock your world, because you'll know from real life experience, this is working for me. And also, I should say, what works for you today won't necessarily be what you'll be doing forever and ever. Your life will evolve, your practices will evolve, and that's okay too. So that's this deep dive conversation that I wanted to have with people, that I get to have with patients, but I don't get to have other, if you're not my patient, I don't get to have these conversations. But I was able to put my thoughts and my feelings on this topic into words in intuitive fasting.
Yeah. I think that it is such an important conversation to have, especially as we continue to be inundated with so much noise in all different forms, whether it be around our diet or around our lifestyles or where we live or, you know, what we choose to believe. The bringing the like embracing of the intuition in the discussion versus only living in the logical or in reaction to what we receive from outside of us. But I find that so many people are so disconnected from even like what you said, that like that knowing, that inner knowing or that feeling in their body. So many people are so disconnected that it's a challenge to start like even knowing like that, okay, that's great, my knowing, but how do I even develop that? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, and that's that conversation that I want to have. When I called the book Intuitive Fasting, I really didn't mean to like irritate anybody or trigger anybody or ruffle anyone's feathers, but I didn't really realize that this concept of intuitive eating can be quite charged and has its own tribalism, just like fasting has its own tribalism. So what you'll see beyond the title of the book, this conversation that I'm having, it's really one of love and understanding and finding the path that works for you to find authentic, in my opinion, intuitive eating. Because it's really nice for us to stay, you know, I'm an intuitive eater, or say use the hashtag on Instagram. But really, what does that truly mean for the practical everyday life? Because there is a certain subset of people that don't have any health issues. They feel great in their body. They've always felt great in their body, and they eat whatever they want, and they can eat very much in an intuitive way with no problem. Then that's fantastic. Like if that's you, great. But I will say, like coming from a functional medicine standpoint and with people that I see, and even statistically what's out there, 50% of the United States has a metabolic issue, a serious blood sugar problem, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, pre-diabetes, all of that. 50 million Americans have an autoimmune disease. Millions of people have other blood sugar problems and hormonal problems. That all of that imbalance, physiological imbalance, will drown out that still small voice of your intuition. Because will it be hangriness or intuition? Is it hormone imbalance or intuition? Like stress eating, emotional eating, blood sugar imbalance is not intuitive eating. So I want people to get to where that small subset of people are already, but I want them to show up for themselves, to do the work for yourself, to gain what I refer to in the book and what's known in the clinical nutrition and functional medicine as metabolic flexibility. It's the ability to burn sugar and burn fat and have that flexibility, that grace and the lightness to have proper hormonal signaling, proper neurotransmitter signaling, proper gut-brain axis communication, proper satiety signaling, to have that, to have the infrastructural stuff on a physiological level, to have what it takes to have intuitive eating. Because at that point, eating will be intuitive. And fasting will be intuitive too. Not because you're willing it or it's some dogmatic, like I'm starving myself. It's no. And when you're metabolically flexible, you can go longer without eating because you are more satiated and your blood sugar is stable. So that's what intuitive fasting is all about. It's born out of metabolic flexibility and proper health. So you can have a resounding knowingness, a deep discernment on what your body loves and what your body doesn't love. So that's what I'm talking about, intuitive fasting, and that thorough conversation that I wanted to have about the topic.
Yeah, it's so interesting actually, because this morning I was doing research on like the gut brain axis and the connection between intuition and the gut, and how easily that inner voice or that gut feeling can be masked by high stress, anxiety, any type of response that we're experiencing, that we're basically constantly experiencing, especially in the year 2021. So I'm curious, when you're working with your clients and then inside of the book as well, how is it just through food that they get out of their heads and into their bodies? Or is it like a set of practices as well that really support them in kind of like stifling the stress response or shifting into homeostasis?
Yeah. So I want to calm that proverbial noise, like that hormone imbalance, inflammation, the blood sugar imbalance, all of that is proverbial noise. So let's center the body. So we use three main tools. One, we use flexible intermittent fasting. which a specific subset of intermittent fasting called time-restricted feeding. So specific windows of time. You're not counting calories. You're not restricting calories. You're eating until satiety in specific windows of time. And then paired in that intermittent fasting windows, those vacillating, ebbing and flowing fasting windows over the course of 4 weeks, you're cycling in and out of deeper fast, lighter fast, deeper fast, lighter fast. So pairing that, and it's amplified exponentially with a clean ketogenic diet, which was my title of my first book, Ketotarian, which is a continuing of that conversation. So again, this is nothing new for me. This is something that I worked with patients for a long time. I'm just bringing it out in a book form so people can understand it. So they're both supportive of each other, because both a clean ketogenic diet, mostly plant-based ketotarian approach, is fasting mimicking. It mimics a lot of the benefits of fasting without actually fasting. And then you get the fasting benefits from time-restricted feeding fasting too. So they're both supporting something called beta-hydroxybutyrate, or BHB, which is the ketone body that is known in research as the fourth macronutrient. So we have protein, fats, carbs, and ketone bodies, or ketones. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to fuel your body. It's not just a way to burn fat. This is not for people that struggle with weight loss resistance. Yes, you'll become a fat burner, but that's not the point of this book. The point is to get healthy, and whatever health looks like for you, that's going to happen. Paracelsus, one of the fathers of modern medicine, he was a physician in the late 1400s, early 1500s in Switzerland. He's known as the father of toxicology in medicine. He was known as the Martin Luther of medicine as well, because he's reforming medicine at that time. But he called fasting the physician within, which I think just summarizes it so eloquently, that if you have weight to lose, you'll become more metabolically flexible, that you'll get to a healthy weight for you. But if you don't have weight to lose, I see a lot of people that are underweight, they'll actually gain muscle weight and gain healthy weight, because their body's preserving their muscle mass better, and being more metabolically flexible will help build muscle, and you're improving gut health. So you're improving digestion and absorption. So you're absorbing nutrients more, because we aren't just what we eat. We are what we absorb. So you're actually resetting your gut microbiome. You mentioned that gut instinct, and that's so much tied to intuition as well. So you're actually physiologically improving digestion and absorption in the gut microbiome, resetting the circadian rhythm of the gut microbiome through these practices too. But it's a cyclical approach. You're not always in ketosis. So there's a lot of flexibility in this, but those are two tools. And then the third tool I call in the book, it's called a metaphysical meal. And it's these mindfulness practices, these spiritual, if you will, or acts of stillness practices that are really important in addition to the physiological stuff, because I want you to physiologically get the infrastructure that is fertile ground for intuitive eating, hormone balance, lowered inflammation, gut brain axis, better blood sugar regulation. All that stuff's important on a physiological level, but on a mental, emotional, spiritual level, I want you to also grow an awareness around food, grow an awareness around your body and your relationship with your body and your relationship with food and your relationship with times of not eating. Because many people eat because they're bored, or eat because they're stressed, or eat because they want to distract and numb themselves. So I want them to bring in these metaphysical meals while they're doing flexible fasting and when they're eating, to grow in awareness around your relationship with all of these tools. So flexible fasting, clean ketotarian diet, plus these metaphysical meals are, as I describe it in the book, this proverbial yoga class for your metabolism and your spirit, really, because you're just like with yoga. You start yoga and you've never done yoga before, you probably suck at it. And like, well, this is unnatural. How could a human body ever do this? It doesn't mean yoga is not for you. It just means it's something new, and you need to gain in strength and flexibility. And that's what I see this all as, is like showing up for yourself to root yourself in your body to gain a resilience and gain a metabolic flexibility.
Do you see any common symptoms come up when starting, like, so if we compare it to like the yoga class, when someone starts this intuitive fasting and starts bringing in the ketotarian diet, the metaphysical meals, and then what was the first one again?
The fasting itself.
Do you see any symptoms come up when they're first starting? So just like to give an example, I did a, Ayurvedic cleanse at the beginning of the year. And within maybe like 48 to 72 hours, I started getting really intense headaches. You know, I was exhausted, but I don't drink a lot of caffeine. So I wasn't sure if it was like detoxing caffeine. Is that like common in the shifting of the diet and just lifestyle overall?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it depends on your baseline. Like, where are you starting out? I think if most people are in we could assume in varying forms of this sugar burning mode, that is akin to like kindling on the fire. You're going to get kindling, you're going to get light, you're going to get energy from that kindling, but that's going to be short lived. So you have to keep putting kindling on the fire. And that kindling can be in the form of grains and starches and carbs and pastas and cereals and candy and sugar in all its various forms, or things that break down into sugar, which are primarily grains. So that is, and there's cleaner kindling of the whole foods based diet. That's certainly better. And then there's the dirty kindling of the conventional refined carbs that really isn't good for any human being. And it's going to be detrimental to your health in the long run, but regardless, that's kindling, and there's better versions and there's least, you know, there's less beneficial versions. The alternative is putting a log on the fire, and that is being keto adapted. But I want, as its term implies, metabolic flexibility.
Yeah.
You should have the ability to burn sugar and burn fat. There's a time for the clean carbohydrates, for hormone health and gut microbiome diversity, and just living your life and having flexibility and not being punitive. So there's a lot of physiological and mental emotional reasons for the clean, the kindling, the sugar, clean carbs too. And then you want to be, you want to have the flexibility to burn both. So to answer your question more pointedly, I think when someone's going off of foods they're depending on for energy, maybe that's caffeine, maybe that's carbs, maybe that's sugar, and you're off of that, then the kindling's off the fire, but your body's not fully fat adapted either. So you don't have the kindling and the log's not in the fire yet, and you're kind of in this metabolic purgatory, which is no fun. So I walk people through at length in the book, and this is something I work with patients on, to like, let's mitigate that. Let's make sure you're eating enough food. Let's make sure you're not hypocaloric, because that can happen too unintentionally, is that they're not used to eating this way and you are like just not eating enough food of the foods you should be eating. So eating amply, eating until satiety during your eating windows, which are pretty big eating windows. So this is not about chronic caloric restriction. So working out that, plus changing, coming off of caffeine, you said, comes with its own set of issues. You could be getting just a caffeine withdrawal headache. It could definitely be Herxheimer detox symptoms coming off of sugar, because your gut microbiome, all the trillions of bacteria and yeast from the microbiome standpoint, when they're not getting all that sugar, they can die off and shift too, and sort of let you know that they want their next fix. So if someone has dysbiosis or bacterial overgrowth or SIFO, small intestinal fungal overgrowth, that can definitely create some additional symptoms too, these die-off or Herxheimer symptoms in the gut. That doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
Yeah,
it actually has to happen, but we want to mitigate how you, how that makes you feel as much as you can. So making sure you're hydrated, make sure your electrolytes are properly balanced and supporting that, and making sure you're eating enough foods.
So do you suggest for somebody who is like, if I buy your book, do you suggest like the first place, and I'm sure you go over this inside the book, the first place to start is by adapting the ketotarian diet so that you do have that log on the fire before you start making these bigger changes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's week one in the book. It's a 4-week plan that you cycle through as many weeks as you want, just like a yoga class. It's not like done in 4 weeks, but you have this manual that you can cycle in as many times as you want to gain that flexibility, gain that resilience, gain that rootedness in your body. So week one is a body reset fast. It's a 12-12 fasting to eating window. That's super easy from a time-restricted feeding window. That's 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. You can eat all day. Yes. 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can eat all day. Have it work with your schedule. You can adjust it. You have 12 hours to eat all your food. And you're basically just not eating until too late. That's the goal of this, to allow at least a couple of hours at night before you go to bed where you're not eating. And you're fasting through the night until you break the fast at breakfast in the morning. But that 12-12 time restricted feeding body reset fast in week one is paired with ketotarian. So yes, week one is really meant to lean into that gently. And as I say to the reader in the book, And I say to patients, this is self-paced. So if you need to repeat week one for 2 weeks, even 3 weeks, even 4 weeks, even though most people won't have to do that. Yeah. The point is, I don't care if you lean into this gently. I want this to be sustainable for you. I do not want this to add to your pile of things that you've tried and it's like, yeah, it worked a little bit, but then you didn't stick with it. Yeah. I want this to be more isn't always better. And it sometimes it's better to lean in incrementally, but make it sustainably versus feel like you need to run through it just to rush through it. So the 4 week cycle can be adjusted accordingly. And some people need that. They need the bigger eating window, lean into it, just eat this delicious food and then go into week two, which week two is still not that extreme, but it's about a 14 to 18 hour eating window or fast or about an 8 hour eating window to a 6 hour eating window. Still not crazy, but it definitely is. We're leaning and we're progressing over increments over the 4 weeks.
So is the goal then to always be on this schedule? Or like you said, kind of just lean into it whenever you intuitively feel guided into adjusting the intermittent fasting?
There's two things I think that can happen here. And I think it's really an interesting question. I think one, for the first two cycles, let's say that, the first 1 to 2 cycles, I would do it as I say it. And if you need to extend that week 1 to 2 weeks or 3 weeks, then do that. I don't think most people will, because even week two, it's still not aggressively crazy.
Yeah.
So you still have a solid amount of time for your body to adjust. And there's so many modifications within the book, because I hear just about every question you can think of when I'm consulting patients online. So I wanted there to be a lot of tweaking and adjustments so people can say, oh, okay, yeah, I'm experiencing this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to adjust that. So it's not a one size fits all, even within the 4 weeks. It's so modifiable and customizable. But with that said, there's two things. As you get metabolic flexibility and you work on these mindfulness tools, the metaphysical meals, you will gain a deep intuition and knowing of what your body loves and hates. So what you will be able to do with that information, as you hear that intuition and get better at understanding how your body works, you'll be able to adjust the protocol as you go along. Mm-hmm. So maybe after two cycles, you'll do more of week two and less of week one. Or you'll know, I felt better here. I need to do less of that and more of that. So that's what I want people to have, is this true intuition about their health. And their food protocol will change too. I teach how to moderate carbohydrates and bring more flexible options. And there's so much nuance to this. And that's what I just see for so many hours a week for the past decade. That's what the real magic of wellness is. It is this bioindividuality, that it's so easy for people for or against something to pontificate their tribalism about certain things. But the truth is oftentimes in the middle, and it's less sexy to say it, but it's definitely the truth to say that fasting is good for people or bad for people. It's like, well, how are you doing the fast, and who is doing it at this point of their journey, which will evolve over time anyways. So that's the nuanced conversation that I wanted to have in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, things that used to be awful for me, now I can, you know, enjoy. Like, as an example, when I was mid-20s, I had really bad cystic acne breakouts. And of course, I turned to Instagram to figure out what I needed to change, as many people do.
Right.
And it was, you know, get rid of gluten, get rid of dairy, get rid of alcohol, get rid of sugar. You know, I had migraines, and it was like, get rid of nitrates and get rid of all of these different things. And then I was left with this a shorter list of what I could have than what I could eat. And I had so much anxiety and stress, and I'm sure my skin cleared up for a little bit. My migraines got better for a little bit, but then I just noticed how miserable I was making myself and how stressed I was making myself. And I had to stop and ask, like, is this actually, like, why am I actually doing this? And is there any like real reason within me for the choices that I've made? And it was empowering to ask that question and to start to bring back pasta and have a cappuccino with whole milk and be like, oh, wow, it's not the end of the world. I'm not imploding from these things. And granted, I don't have an autoimmune disease or any like major health issues, but I think that it's like what I experience is so common. And it can be incredibly, just contracting to get caught up in so much of the black and white type of approach to our food.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well said. I think that people need to find this. I actually call it in the book food peace. I want them to find peace with food and not have a war against food. And many people like to weaponize food or weaponize for or against one thing. But it doesn't. Only people that hurts are the people going through the health issues.
Yeah.
People that are so disillusioned on like what to do. And they're hearing all these shame-based statements about things. And that's really not my message at all, because people have, there's enough of that in the world. It's like, let's find out what works for you and do more of that. And let's avoid the things that don't make you feel good. And then there's this freedom that happens and this peace that happens where it's like, okay, this isn't about all the things I quote unquote can't have, because ultimately you can have whatever you want. You can eat whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. It's that, no, I love feeling better more than I miss those things that didn't make me feel good. Mm-hmm. And let's look at all the things I can have. Like you said, you're not going to implode by having these things you thought were bad, but actually are fine for you. And it makes your quality of life improve. So that's definitely true, because then it won't be a program. It won't be a protocol. It won't be something that you have to like think about and be obsessive about. It'll just be a natural outpouring of loving your body enough to do things that make you feel great.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that so much. One of my girlfriends is on the, have you heard of the app Noom? She's been using that, and she was sharing with me some of the psychology lessons that they share around eating. And I think one of the biggest things that she shared that I was like, oh, that like, I love looking at it that from that perspective is like, oh, I'm not having the drink because it's like, I'm going to be hungover tomorrow or because I get a zit the next day. I'm choosing not to have the drink, or I'm choosing not to have this thing because I feel so much better when I choose this thing instead, and really prioritizing it from the place of like what feels good versus what I can't have.
Absolutely. That's coming from a place of abundance, and using food and even fasting as a place of abundance, because these are tools that can make you feel greater and enhance your quality of life. So it's really not about deprivation at all. If anything, it's actually quite restrictive to not feel good in your own body. That's restrictive. Feeling great in your body and having a peace, that's anything but restrictive.
So why did our culture walk away from this, well, one, intuitive eating, but also intermittent fasting, when like historically that has been the dominant model of eating?
It's very interesting. I mean, we've abandoned so much. I mean, we have amazing advancements of modernity. Look, there's nothing. We're connecting right now across the country. We're connecting with people around the world. That's amazing things. But so there's nothing wrong with the amazing advancements, but we have the way that we've done it, unfettered, unconsciously, we have gotten to the place where we've abandoned our roots so much that our DNA is living in a brave new world in many ways. So researchers estimate that our genetics haven't changed in 10,000 years, but yet our world has changed very dramatically in a very short period of time. So this genetic epigenetic mismatch, or this evolutionary mismatch, is definitely at the heart of what researchers are exploring as to being at least a component, if not a major component, as to why we see this epidemic rise of chronic health problems, metabolic issues, autoimmune conditions, and mental health issues, because these are all inflammatory problems. So our immune system is like, what the heck's going on here? Because of this genetic, epigenetic, this ourself, our DNA, and the world around us, this mismatch. So this chasm is growing by leaps and bounds. So the way that we eat and when we eat and how much we eat, all of that stuff has changed in a very short period of time. So from an ancestral health perspective, times of not eating would have been very much that it's actually encoded in our DNA as fasting, because of food scarcity and because it just wasn't culturally what humans would have done for the majority of human history of always snacking, always eating, especially always eating and always snacking, very disruptive foods to our microbiome and our health. But even good healthy foods, always eating, there's a time to eat and a time to fast. There's a time to repair and a time to give your body nutrition. So both are needed. And we've over-focused on one side, and it's like, we're so addicted and it's so ingrained in our culture that if you even talk about a slight fluctuation in that eating pattern, it throws the gluttonous aspect of the human heart right now to be thrown up as we're advocating for starvation and eating disorder. That's not the case at all. This is what humans would have done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, both from an ancestral health perspective and a spiritual perspective and a early medicine standpoint. We talk about Hippocrates, the father of medicine, used fasting for patients. Paracelsus used fasting for patients, and all major spiritual traditions used it as well. Islam, Ramadan, Judaism with Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, Christianity, Lent, many indigenous cultures used it for health reasons and for spiritual reasons. So if anything, the new kid on the block is not fasting.
Yeah.
It's the last 100 or so years, or you can even say even the last 75, 50 years. That's the new thing, not the 10,000 years before it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting to look at it from that perspective. And even as you were sharing it, it's like, wait, if they take something away from me, I feel entitled. Like, give me back my cookie.
And have the cookie if you want to. Have a cookie if you want to. It's all right. But it's like, okay, can we rethink and think outside of the box to say, how can I enhance how I feel? And maybe there's a time for the cookie and the time for not having the cookie. But to say at this point in my journey that a time without is somehow bad, it may not be where you're at, but it's where I'm at. And this is a tool for me to feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So you've mentioned metabolic flexibility quite a bit. When we're not in that space, like what's happening? How does that affect our health?
So metabolic inflexibility or metabolic rigidity is that sugar burning mode. You're going to feel hangry and inflamed and insatiable cravings and different inflammatory problems, different digestive problems. That's what metabolic inflexibility or metabolic rigidity looks like. So metabolic flexibility is the antithesis of that. So that is someone having that log on the fire. It's more slow burning. It's more sustainable. Again, there's a time for a log on the fire, burning fat for fuel, and a time for kindling on the fire, burning sugar for fuel. The best fire is actually a log and a kindling, not just kindling, yeah. And not just a log either. So I talk about in the book how to, through this yoga class for your metabolism, to actually use both. They're actually two amazing fuel sources to feel your best. So women around their cycle, they can harness the amazing clean kindling of clean carbohydrates on the first couple of days of their period, of their cycle, and then around ovulation. That supports progesterone health, supports thyroid conversion, supports gut microbiome diversity. That's a great thing. Doesn't mean you always need to be gorging on it all throughout the month. That's too much kindling, and you're depending on something that's not a sustainable fuel source. So let's use it strategically to leverage the amazing benefits without more is always better. More isn't always better. Yeah. And same with the log. Like you only having a log in the fire, yes, it's more sustainable and you want to have that as your primary go-to resilience, but it doesn't mean that's only what you're depending on. So I want people to have that fat adaptation, that being fat adapted or keto adapted, they will have that log on the fire, but it's not the only thing. So I don't think most people need to be, or it's even beneficial to be in just ketosis forever and ever. Amen. I think that there should be a flexibility with this specifically for gut microbiome diversity, progesterone support for cycling women, and for thyroid hormone conversion, really for everybody. So, that's the context that I think is important that I want people to find for themselves. Metabolic flexibility is, as its name implies, flexibility.
Yeah. I think that it also just comes back to just this like reoccurring conversation that I've been having so often is just the cyclical nature of being human in every sense of the word. You know, it's not just our digestion, our hormones, it's our emotions, it's the ups and downs of life. It's not just one way up, mm-hmm. up, and we go. We're cyclical because we are a part of nature, and that includes our nutrition and our food.
Absolutely. That's actually how I started the book out. I said I started the book out, I'll paraphrase, but there's a duality sewn into, there's a balance sewn into the universe. There's a duality quilted in the cosmos that we are a part of. We need to remind ourselves of that we, there's a rhythm in nature, this, and we're part of that. And if you even look at the symbolism there, like what's happening globally right now with climate change and all that proverbial noise that's happening on an environmental level, what's happening on a socio like a geopolitical, social media side of things, with all that noise and tribalism. There's so much noise that's going on and imbalance going on that's happening on a micro level too, in the form of chronic inflammation and hormone imbalance. And as above, so below. And we are just an outer individual representation of what's going on globally. So it's not a coincidence. I mean, what's going on when you look at climate change and global warming, that's what chronic inflammation is on an individual level. So we are in desperate need of a pause. And fasting is that sort of flexible fasting, is that reset, that pause and stillness. It just, we need it so bad as a human race.
I second that. And I'm so excited to get my hands on your book. By the time that this episode goes live, it will be out now. So where can people find it? How can we continue following along with everything that you're doing? And just love up on all the different things that you have to offer.
Thank you so much. Everything's at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. The links to intuitive fasting, all the other books are there. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, indie books, all of that stuff. But yeah, I'm on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole too. But thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of The Alchemized Life. I had so much fun during this conversation, and if you did too, it would mean the world to me if you could take a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I don't know if you know this, but every single review helps to get these episodes out to even more people. And if you are in alignment with me, wanting to change the world and make a massive impact through spirituality, wellness, mindfulness, and all of the yummy things that we talk about on The Alchemized Life, your review helps. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next week.